Chapter 15, verses 1 to 21, the Song of Moses. Then Moses and the Israelites sang this song to the Lord. I will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and its rider he has hurled into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him. My Father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has hurled into the sea. The best of Pharaoh's officers are drowned in the Red Sea. The deep waters have covered them. They sank to the depths like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, was majestic in power. Your right hand, O Lord, shattered the enemy. In the greatness of your majesty, you threw down those who opposed you. You unleashed your burning anger. It consumed them like stubble. By the blast of your nostrils, the waters piled up. The surging waters stood firm like a wall. The deep waters congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy boasted, I will pursue. I will overtake them. I will divide the spoils. I will gorge myself on them. I will draw my sword and my hand will destroy them. But you blew with your breath, and the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who among the gods is like you, O Lord? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glory, working wonders? You stretched out your right hand, and the earth swallowed them. In your unfailing love, you will lead the people you have redeemed. In your strength, you will guide them to your holy dwelling. The nations will hear and tremble. Anguish will grip the people of Philistia. The chiefs of Edom will be terrified. The leaders of Moab will be seized with trembling. The people of Canaan will melt away. Terror and dread will fall upon them. By the power of your arm, they will be as still as a stone until your people pass by, O Lord, until the people you bought pass by. You will bring them in and plant them on the mountain of your inheritance, the place, O Lord, you made for your dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, your hand established. The Lord will reign forever and ever. When Pharaoh's horses, chariots, and horsemen went into the sea, the Lord brought the waters of the sea back over them. But the Israelites walked through the sea on dry ground. Then Miriam the prophetess, Aaron's sister, took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women followed her. With tambourines and dancing, Miriam sang to them. Sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and its rider he has hurled into the sea.
The call of Moses and the call on his people. We've been hearing about how God called Moses, and that was part of a bigger call on his people. And with that was a promise of freedom from slavery, freedom from oppression, freedom being bound, and release to be the people that God wanted them to be his people, a kind of a shining light, not just for themselves, but for all the nations around, ultimately to the whole world. And God promised that he would lead them out of Egypt. And guess what? He did that. There was a few episodes with Pharaoh along the way. You can read that yourselves between chapters 3 and 14. But God led them out and led the people. But then, curiously, he led them on a little bit of a detour and a U-turn and to the sea. And by now, the Egyptians had changed their mind again and decided to pursue them with their might and their army and their chariot and their horsemen. And so the Israelites found themselves trapped. See here, army charging towards you from over there. So drown in the sea or be overrun by the army. You choose which would be your fate. But then God did something amazing again, and something miraculous, and intervened through Moses, and the sea, the waters parted, all the Israelites were able to march across. That's about a million people, with whatever stuff they were carrying, all went across safely to the other side, where of course the Egyptian army just kept pursuing and thought, well, we can cross too. And as they were crossing, then the seas came back together, and just about all of the army was killed by drowning. So the Israelites, when they looked back, could see that they had been rescued in the most spectacular way. A way that they would surely never forget for all their lives. And it would be a story they'd tell their children and their grandchildren and so on. And so it's no surprise that Moses and Miriam, that's Moses' sister-in-law, wrote a song about this story and put what had happened into song that Gillian read for us earlier. Overflowing with emotion and words into music. This would be a song that they would surely sing for years to come. And we see that in the poems, the Psalms in the Bible. You'll find that they keep reflecting back on snippets from these and other stories from Exodus. Psalm 78 is a great example of this, one of the longer Psalms. Cherry picks different instances, including this miraculous rescue. It's kind of now like the Israelites, it's kind of like their holiday club theme tune. You know, the song that they're going to sing every day all through. Those of you who do Holiday Club will know what I mean. And it gets stuck in your brain. Because it was a defining moment for the people. It was a shared experience for all. Many of them, all million had been rescued. And so as a community, they had experienced this. And remember last term, I gave you a technical word for a people going through a difficult experience together. I wonder if people can remember what that word is. It's communitas. Communitas is going through a difficult experience together. Remember the survivors of the Grenfell fire? They've experienced communitas. The people undergoing the hurricane right now. For those who physically survive, they will come out with having been through communitas, having shared this terrifying experience together. And it's no surprise that people want to express that emotion into song, because song and music is such a powerful medium. That's why we use song as part of our worship. If you want to know anything about just how powerful putting stories or emotions or feelings into words, we'll just talk to Ronnie for more than 3 minutes and he'll tell you about it, as someone who loves to express in song, to put what's in here into words and music. And that's why we had the little quiz with the five songs of struggle, all capturing in their own way that sense of struggle, that longing for freedom, sending messages to one another that freedom is possible in God, and one day he will take us to glory with him. And we see that throughout the Bible. Exodus 15 is one example. Another great example we referred to last week when the angel gives Mary the download that she's going to have a son and he's going to be called Jesus, who's going to save people and take people to release and freedom. She kind of bursts into a poem or a song and sings about it. When Paul and Silas were arrested for their faith, telling people about Jesus, and put in a prison cell, and they sat in the cell at midnight, what did they do? They broke into song and sang worship, even while they were in shackles. And then at the very end of the Bible, a great passage is it, Revelation. It's right, the last book of the Bible, Revelation chapter 14. And it's a great moment. All the assembled believers in Jesus, all the people of God are coming together and they're bringing together to worship before God. And it's a wonderful, majestic, majestic moment. And in chapter 14, verse 3, it says, "And the people sang a new song." They found a new song to sing in worship now they'd been gathered before God and his glory. Well, what's in this song in Exodus chapter 15? I'm just going to highlight a few things. It's about God. And it describes God. In verse 2 it says, "He is our strength and defense." It's all about him. It's not about human power. It's all about God. And the only thing we as humanoids can do is worship, because it's about him. But it talks about the enemies and their strength. This is in verses 3-7. And it talks about the enemies and their bravado and their strength. But of course, it's also talking about God and power. So enemies and God, who's going to win? The answer is obvious and conveyed in the song. Now, we should be careful here, because the victory, of course, is expressed in physical terms. These Egyptian soldiers, they drowned as the seas came over. It talks about them being hurled into the sea. Now, for our current day sensitivities, that might be difficult. But let's remember that for us as Christians, we're told very clearly that our struggle is not with the physical, it's not with the flesh and blood, it's with the powers and the authorities and the spirituality and the principalities and the powers in the spiritual realm. That's Ephesians 6. That's our struggle as believers in Jesus, even though this song is expressed in very much earth physical terms. But verses 8 and 10 I love. I think they are wonderful. It talks about God's breath. And in verse 9 it says, "The enemy can boast." The enemy can boast all the enemy likes. But what does God have to do? Just has to breathe. And it's sorted. Just the breath from God. The enemy can boast all their likes, but God just has to breathe. And so you then get to verse 11, "The wonder of God, who is like you, and glory." It's funny how glory keeps coming up. It's why I included that final song in the little quiz. The glory of God is shown. And how is that glory of God characterized? Well, verse 13 gives us a clue: by the unfailing love of God. His leading is out of his unfailing love. And then verse 17, it comes to its conclusion, its climax, if you like, and it talks about a wonderful inheritance for his people. And they are coming together, assembling on a mountain in praise. That kind of gives you, in film terms, a prequel of Revelation 14. Coming together in praise with the presence of God around the mountain, around them, to praise. That's what we read about in Revelation 14, where they sing a new song. So plenty of good things in this particular song. But one final thing I want to say on the passage itself is in verse 20. It says that Miriam, a female, Moses' sister-in-law, Aaron, Moses, and you've got Aaron, a brother, and his wife Miriam, was a prophet and led the people, and certainly the other women in the camp, led them together in this song as a prophet. And there's an important point there. Not just the male-female thing, although I always think that's important, but in music, there can be prophecy. In music, there can be prophetic expression, telling what God is doing. And so when we gather for our worship here and we use songs and we use music, there's potentially prophecy through that. And we should expect that as we sing together, spiritual things happen. Because we're not just singing, but joining together with loads of others in a spiritual work as we use our songs and our music. Well, that's the song of the people and their theme tune arising from their shared experience, their communitas. But I wonder, what's our the shared experiences of us in this church? What are our collective shared experiences? What has God led us through? That's why I asked the small groups to keep a group journal, to just note down occasionally in their gatherings what God is doing among them. Where are they seeing God do things and things change? Because the rainbow group, the group that's mostly mums or young mums gathering to pray for each other every week, they're experts at this because they write down every prayer that they are asked to pray for. And then they go back, and when prayers are answered, they tick them off. And then, of course, they can go back a bit later and see how much God has done, this group journal, this collective experience. Remember, as a church, it was only a few years ago where collectively just about all of us got together to pray for one of our number who was facing a brain tumour operation that was going to last, was it 16 hours or so in Edinburgh's. And we shared that together, praying for that person to see them safely through. And that prayer was answered. Remember that we've done outreach in places like Stara Green, and we've prayed together. I've certainly taken the leadership. And we went and we prayed on Stara Green, on the grass there, for the outreach, the thing that we were going to do. And I wonder if there's loads of examples like that from the last few years, from the last 10, 20 years, maybe longer. What are our collective experiences? What is the sum total of our walk with Jesus stories? And it's important to explore that because I meet so many people in the high street, but also people who kind of engage with churches or congregations or with a Christian faith in some way. I meet so many people who their understanding of church, if you boil it down, comes down to this simple equation, which Ollie will show on the screen for us. The simple equation that some kind of church building, plus some kind of pastor, who of course always looks like that, plus some kind of service with musicians, maybe they've got a band, maybe it's more traditional, but it's some kind of musical and service. Yeah, those three ingredients, building plus pastor plus some kind of service, equals church. And of course, as you know, because I've said this many times, I want to say that is wrong. Next slide, please, Ollie. That is wrong. Because the Bible doesn't tell us that at all. Jesus doesn't tell us that and doesn't model that. And then as the early Christians, they wrote letters to each other, which are recorded in our Bible and give us the newer part of the Bible, they don't tell us that either. Now, the church is about people. If we can go to the next slide, people. Many varied people, but the point is they are following Jesus. And they are following Jesus somehow together. So we go to the next slide. There's a togetherness about them. It might be a fuzzy boundary. It might be a squashed, wonky boundary as I've drawn here. But somehow they are following Jesus and trying to do that together. That's the model of church we see in Scripture. That's what Jesus started. And that's what we see in the rest of the New Testament. And that means that each of these people following Jesus get to be Jesus' hands and feet out in the world. Each get to be empowered to minister for Jesus and do kingdom work wherever they go and wherever they find themselves in all their different places. And the only thing we say is we want to empower and release people to do this good kingdom stuff, but the only thing that we say is don't do it as a lone ranger. Do it in relation to others. We go to the next slide, please, Ollie. Do it with relationships going on in this collective that we call church. But what that means is that when you serve, whether it's on your own because you're the only Christian in the office, or whether it's part of a church-organized activity like our parent and toddler or J team or whatever, whether it's individual or whether it's in an organized activity, in some sense, you are acting as church, individual or in an organized activity. You are acting as church. Kate Allen, one of our members here, did me a favor this week because she randomly posted a quote on our Facebook group. People do that from time to time. She randomly quoted William Booth, the co-founder of the Salvation Army. And the quote was this: it's, "I'm not waiting for a move of God. I am a move of God. I'm not waiting for a move of God. I am a move of God. When I see that someone needs to be ministered to in the name of Jesus, I don't wait for a move of God. I just go and minister to them, and that is a move of God right there." Well, I want to be a little bit cheeky this morning and misappropriate the great William Booth's words and say, but also in a sense, we can say, I'm not waiting for a move of the church. I am a move of the church. So when you see a situation, you think, the church really ought to do something about that. The church really ought to minister into this area. Well, go and minister. Do it in relationship with others in the church, but go and minister, and there you are. There is a move of the church. So our gathering in this place, like we are here on a Sunday, our gathering together for our whole church prayer times that we have a couple of times a year, our gathering together as members for our meetings of church members that we do four times a year, any of those are bringing together this collective ministry that we do out and around the place. It's kind of like the culmination of 80 individual stories all coming together and being celebrated in our expression here on a Sunday morning, in our whole church prayer, in our church meetings, bringing together the individual stories, the ministries, the organized stuff, the stuff that you just go and do, bringing it all together as a collective expression. And that gives us our final picture as we gather together in this is what we call our resourcing base. But here's a technical question, and I know I've asked this question before. Where in this picture, where is the action? Where is your growth as a disciple? Is it in the little circle in the middle? Or is it in the outer ring? See, I would argue vehemently that it's in the outer ring. It's out there when you're out in the city, when you're working at the school, where you're doing J-team or bringing volunteering into parent and toddler, or you're going and doing something with a food bank or many other possibilities. It's out there because that's where you're putting yourself on the line. That's where you're seeing the move of God. That's where you grow and you learn. Sure, when we come together, we have shared experience. We have worship together and we have teaching from the front and given out from the center. But all that resources you for the stuff that you're doing in the outer ring. That's where the real growth is. Sometimes people say to me that Sunday is the main source of their teaching. And I kind of want to say, well, you need to learn to balance it with stuff that's going on out in the community. Sure, this supplies good stuff, but it's to resource you for the things that you are doing out in the outer ring, which is why we talk of a resourcing base, resourcing us for discipleship in mission. I wish there was a way to capture the 80 individual stories week by week. We kind of try and do that with the happy, sad face slips, but I don't know whether that actually really works or kind of cuts it. To try and see what God is doing out across the city through the week. Because our vision is, our top line, our desire is to see kingdom life across the city, to see people being healed, to see people meeting Jesus, to see people being forgiven and finding forgiveness, to see reconciliation. All that is kingdom life wherever people are. They don't need to come to this physical building to experience Jesus breaking into their lives. That's what we want to see. But when we see that, we'll see it out in the different locations. Is there some way we can bring that experience and share it back centrally here? So that we find our collective voice, our expression jointly of what God is leading us through. Well, in a moment, I'm going to set you a short exercise. I'd like you to think, actually, what has God led us through? It might be your own individual story, or it might be part of your small group, or it might be just something you know we've gone through as a church. I've mentioned praying for someone facing an operation. I could mention praying for someone else who's languishing in a hospital with some strange infection that the doctors just can't get their head round. And then we go and pray, and that afternoon it turns a corner and the doctors work out how to start treating it. I'm talking about how food banks started. I'm talking about how CAP has emerged between us and our partner churches. Maybe the transition or starting Messy Church and then transitioning from that to Imagine. I'm sure there are many, many stories. So have a think in a moment and write just a couple of words or something that triggers that memory of a story, and we'll come and we'll stick them anywhere you like on our journey here as we listen to some music. So I'm going to pray, and then I'd invite you to just turn to your neighbour and say, yeah, what? God's led us through a lot of stuff in my lifetime or my time here. And just grab a post-it note out of the basket and write that down and stick it on there. And then the musicians will lead us in our worship. After the second song, there'll be some space if anyone wants to grab the microphone off me and just share what has God been doing among us and how might we see him move among us in the future. As we seek him to see kingdom life across the city, let's pray.